You are listening to the Otway Health Check. I've got a special guest in the studio with me today, Dr. Charlie Cork. He's an intensive care specialist at University Hospital Geelong and also president of the College of Intensive Care of Australia and New Zealand. He's also the regional clinical lead for the Advanced Care Planning Program. And I've also got Senny Turner in here with me. She is a work placement student from Victoria University studying a Bachelor of Marketing Communications. Welcome to the both of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
What we're going to be talking about today is advanced care planning. Not many people know what advanced care planning is or what it means or what it entails. Charlie, if you could enlighten us, please.
Well, advanced care planning is about thinking about the end, which is difficult for people, but it's about thinking about a situation that you wouldn't accept. That's become necessary over the last decades because we can do so much now to keep people alive. And it's become evident that we can do more than people generally want. And trying to understand where that line in the sand is has become really important for us.
So at what stage of life would we be considering advanced care planning?
Well, in a way, it's a little bit like wills. Wills are something that we should probably all have, but as we get older and older, it becomes sillier and sillier to not have a will. But actually, thinking about what's unacceptable to you is relevant to young people because terrible things can happen to young people, and in my career, I'm well aware of that. But of course, as you get older and older, the chances of terrible things happening become higher. We all die eventually. And it's a case of, you know, how do you want to do it? And it was interesting with advanced care planning. They did a vox pop at Flinders Street Station with people asking them what they were worried about. And they were all worried about money. But none of them spontaneously came up and worried about that end bit.
It's interesting that you say that because when I think, I'm a 34-year-old woman, but when I think of the end for me, I think about my assets and I better write a will because I want to pass those assets on. In terms of my healthcare, that's something that, you know, I've really sort of thought, well, maybe I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. Mm. And Senny, I don't know if you sort of feel that way being a bit younger than me. How do you feel about is end of life even something that you think about?
No, not really. I just recently turned 21 and the only variable in my life is that I travel a lot for work. So I have had discussions with people in my life about what would happen if an accident was to occur, me traveling so much. That is really the extent of the thought that I've put into it. But as Charlie said earlier, it's a lot to do with having a will or what to do with my assets. Personally, I've never even thought about the healthcare that I would want for myself.
So I suppose, there's probably never a right time or a good time. Is it something that just should be done or can be changed? Or
absolutely. It's something that can be, I think, that the right time's any time. And in fact, it's something that's much easier to do when you're relaxed and thinking about it way away from the event. We encourage people to do it at any time. I think it's about you, and some of the research shows that it's about the sort of person you are. Are you somebody who will tolerate anything to stay alive? Is pretty adaptable, sees the best in everything, and even a little bit of something is you know, you see the positive in it. Or are you the sort of person where dignity is very important, where your independence, being able to do things, is very important? Do you see pain and suffering as something that's sort of life enhancing, or is it something dreadful that you'd like to avoid? And I think that's very important. So understanding that for people is really, really important. And I'm often saying, you know, what sort of person is this that we're looking after to try and make the right decisions?
Sure.
And people go back to the idea of saying, my family, you know, when the time comes, my family and my doctor will know what to do. And unfortunately, they're wrong because the doctors do everything to, our goal is to strive to keep people alive. Mm. And we are pretty good at it. And I mean, healthcare is now amazing. There's amazing stuff we can do, and I love doing it. And bringing people back to health is you know, why we do what we do. And over the last decades, it's become fantastic what we can do. But the rub is that we can also do far too much because we don't have permission to stop. And then families, it's interesting that from a family perspective, love and duty are huge. So saying to a family, do you think we should do this? They always say yes.
Well, it's that sort of, as a doctor and as a physician, you have that duty to save, like you said, but your family also have that duty to, if there's just one chance, if there's just one chance they're going to get better, and it all becomes about letting go.
Yes.
And at what point do you feel like you need to let go? And, you know, in your book, Letting Go, How to Plan for a Good Death, I was having a read and, you talk about as we focus on the disease, it's very easy to forget the person behind the disease. And usually in a state of crisis, when you're stressed, it's very hard to make that decision. But when you are focused on the disease itself, you're focused on treating the disease rather than looking at that person and saying, well, what actually do you want? That's really hard because we're all trying to save them.
That's right. Healing, curing, solving, that's what medicine's about. So this is difficult. So leaving it to doctors really doesn't work. And leaving it to families without guidance really doesn't work. And so what I've realized over the years is the only way to really make this work is when the person themselves does it. And that's the reason to write the book. And I've seen so many families struggling. And the idea, I'll make the decision at the end. Well, at the end, when the crisis comes, almost everybody is in a position where they're not themselves in a position to make that decision. So at the end, it switches to family and doctors to do it, and they need permission to not go nuts.
Well, yeah, I mean, in your book I was reading about Rita's story and, sort of strong-willed woman who had the onset of dementia, and the family was torn between the decision-making process. Some felt that because she was a strong woman she could handle anything, but on the other foot, some people felt like she wouldn't want to go that way. So it's at what point do you then drive that conversation to make a decision? Ultimately, making the decision is the hardest part. It's not always infinite as well when you make that decision.
No, and the trouble with advanced care planning is you don't actually know the situation that's going to happen in the future. So you've got to predict a bit for it, which we don't find easy. And the family need to really be on the same page. To make this work, all the family need to be on the same page. It works well when you have a situation and you say a crisis has happened and you walk into the family and you say, what would mum want? And you explain the situation and say, what do you think mum would want? And they all go, mum would definitely want it. Or they go, mum would definitely not want it. And they're all on the same page. I love it when that happens. I must admit it's rather unusual, but it's lovely when it happens.
In the book, you talk about, you tell the story of your grandmother, who also was described as pretty strong, never smoked, never drank, worked really hard and seemed like a very determined woman. But, as she got into her 90s and started to develop her ailments and eventually, unfortunately, and sorry to hear, she developed a blood clot in her leg. It was sort of going past that 90th year and slowly going. And then when it was something significant, totally significant happened, that's when,
Well, we needed help for that. I mean, that's really my personal journey because my granny, I can remember her from the first time, early as a little boy, her saying, never let that happen to me, was something she said very clearly, very often from really quite early on. And as she deteriorated, we did the thing that all families do, or most families do, which was to try and do the best for her, which involved getting the best doctor, getting her to the doctor quickly, getting the tablets, making sure she took them, getting her to the best hospital when she needed some things done. And by doing that, we actually made sure, as she became increasingly demented, that we actually did keep her alive and did allow her to get to the point that she'd made us promise we wouldn't do. So we actually actively work to do the opposite of what she wanted. And that's fascinating. And I see it all the time. And then at the end, when the clot came, she was really very demented by then. And what we did, the same thing. We were calling the ambulance to try and get her to hospital quickly. And have, but the GP came and he just quietly said, I'm wondering whether this would be the right thing, whether it would be what she would want. And as soon as he said what she would want, it, as a family, it's sort of like a switch switched, and we realised, of course, it wasn't the last thing that she'd want. You could never say it was what she wanted because she'd been telling us she definitely didn't want it. And he offered to take away, to give her something to take away the pain, and that he'd help and we could keep her at home, and we did. But it needed that medical guidance, and we needed the help to listen to her rather than think about what we thought was the right thing. And that was really that was before I even came into medicine, but it was an amazing turning point for me. And I felt guilty that we just didn't listen. But I see it again all the time in other people. But, you know, I can't blame other people because I was as bad as everybody else.
But it might not even be a question of, not potentially listening. I think that just the inevitability of the reality of the situation might have set in at that time, because when someone's a little bit sick, can still keep going. They can still keep going. But then when there's something that's significant that happens, I feel that maybe that inevitability makes it, the reality set in and go, okay, now where do we go from here?
It can help if you have a big thing that you can. Now big things tend to get responded quickly by ambulance, taken quickly to emergency department, taken quickly into theatre. Everything's got quick and efficient. So the MICA service we have in Victoria is utterly fantastic. The ambulance service is fantastic. Emergency services are fantastic. You know, from here, the chopper to Geelong is fantastic. Mm. You know, we've got all this stuff. So we can whip people in quickly. So a crisis may be a reason to have a deep think, but actually it's often hard to think in a crisis because there's so much is happening. People have talked about, you know, stopping the train and trying to stop it all happening. It's staggeringly quick how fast it happens.
And it's a question of how far do we actually want to push on? Yeah. There is the duty to save life, but at what cost? And this is where your quality would come into it. Quality over quantity, I suppose, is how you could describe it.
That's right, and that's why it's so important. But it's so important for the person themselves to say, because one person's quality, what life is amazing, is another person's unacceptability, and we need to know where it is. And I've done research that we did some research in Geelong, looking at how people rated dignity, independence, pain and suffering, and living longer, and generally, living longer was not as valuable as those other things. And when it said, which one would you like your doctor to focus on the most, living longer wasn't what they wanted. So it's interesting that we have a medical system that has one paradigm, and that's why it's out of keeping with what people really want. So we do have to stand up. And at one of the book launch, the writers' festivals that I was at, somebody stood up at the back and they said, I've just realised what this is. This is about activism. We need to become activists in order to prevent what we don't want. And like everything else in life, we've now got to, we can't just sit there, we've got to do something. And I like that. I thought that was a very observant comment.
I agree. Cindy, did you want to rein in on that at all?
Yeah. I noticed you said earlier that families are either all on board for keeping them alive a little bit longer, or more on board of what the family member would actually want. My question is, a lot of younger people, so I'm in my early 20s and I have siblings that are in their teens. What advice could you give to the younger generations in keeping on the same page as the rest of the family when it comes to another family member's healthcare?
Well, I think it's listening, letting them talk. Because my auntie, wanted to tell me about what was important to her, and I didn't want to listen. I said, no, you're healthy. I don't, you don't need to talk about this. It's silly. And she's saying, shut up, sit down, and listen. And I think that was very wise advice. So actually listening, and it is important, because when the crisis comes, it is very, very, very hard to make these decisions. And you do need the permission to make the decision not to do it. You need a lot of permission. And when you don't have it and you don't know what to do, we have families who are very damaged after it, very guilty, very stressed, and find the whole thing terrible because they never knew what the right answer is to do. And you can never work it out. But when somebody dies, oh no, if they die, if you try and do everything, you put them through, and I, you know, see people put through an enormous amount of technology at the end of life, and then they die. Well, you know, you can feel very bad about that. So it's an important decision to have to make. So listening as a and I think it shows respect. And in my book, I'd say, you know, it's important for the person saying it to say, if you love me, please do what I want. And if you don't do what I want, I'll come back and haunt you.
I suppose, your background has been working in ICU for, I presume, for a very, very long time. I shouldn't say that, but, for a long time you've been in very experienced in the ICU. And I'd imagine that when crisis hits and there's no advanced care plan in place, you have the duty to save. But
we do, and the family generally say do it.
Yeah, and I suppose for the family who are not used to being in an emergency room or in an ICU. I caught your Insider episode on Do Not Resuscitate, and there was a young emergency nurse there that was describing just how brutal the process of CPR was. And a lot of families would not be ready for something like that, let alone subject their elderly relative to it. But yet they do, because it's about trying to save the life rather than thinking about, is this what's going to be best for my family member?
That's right. And the journey can be quite difficult in hospital. It's not fun being really ill in hospital for a long time. And the outcome at the end, how you survive, may be very poor. So now we do have, you know, the new reality of today is that a significant number of patients who come through intensive care are discharged from hospital to nursing home. So we fight a lot to get people to a nursing home. Now, if that person never wanted to go to the nursing home, this huge battle to get them to a place that they did want to go is perhaps a bit silly. And when we also recognise that people who are failing a big hospital admission, they don't go back to how they were before. They're well further down that track of not managing. So it's not an easy. It's not a miracle. It can be on some occasions medicine, and a lot of occasions medicine. The right, you know, it's a very powerful, very wonderful thing when you use it right, and it's a very shocking, very awful thing when you use it wrong. So good decision making is really, really important, and that's what this is. That's how I see this.
Sure. We might have a little bit of a break, and when we come back, we might talk about more about the decision-making process and how people can actually start to think about putting together their advanced care plans. This is the Otway Health Check, and we've got Dr. Charlie Cork with us. We'll be back soon. This is the Otway Health Check, and we've got Dr. Charlie Cork in the studio. We're talking about advanced care planning and the decision-making process that's involved in advanced care planning. Senny, did you want to ask a few questions about the involvement of what we should be doing when it comes to advanced care planning?
I know that we were talking about the point of call, so where to go when you decide that it's time to start writing an advanced care plan, and then what to do with it once you've actually written it. So when to give it to family members and discuss with them what you actually need and want with your healthcare.
Well, I think the process is to think about it first and start just generally talking and have the conversation at home, thinking about what's acceptable and unacceptable to you. You can talk to your GP about it. Some GPs are very good at understanding it, but others may not be. But I think there's generally an increasing realisation. But often the GP time, which is sort of 5 to 10 minutes, may well not be enough for what this takes. So that may not be the ideal way. We provide some services, certainly in Geelong. There's a clinic, an advanced care planning clinic, and I know that Otway Health provide some service to help people to complete these plans.
Yes, anyone can pop into Otway Health and make an appointment with our nurse practitioner, Brad Pickering, or just approach the nurse's station and say, I want to work on an advanced care plan. And we will definitely help you with that. All of our residents at Otway Health have an advanced care plan in place. We find that incredibly important at that stage of life as well. But really, you can't really sum something like this up in 10 minutes. As you said, Charlie, your GP may be able to provide you with some insight or maybe provide you with an update on your current health status as well. But inevitably, it's something that you really need to think about, discuss and plan. Your book really highlights the ambiguity of some plans where they say no heroics, things like that. And heroic, you know, that's sort of that how long's a piece of string. What does heroic actually mean in terms of that person's values or what they consider to be heroic? So being very clear about how you write your plan, I would assume, would become really essential.
That is important. And one of the problems is that a lot of people say, I've got a plan, but I went through a large number of plans that we had in Barwon Health, and I reckoned about a third of them would have given reasonable guidance. So two-thirds of people thought they had a plan, like they thought they had insurance. You know, it's a bit like thinking you've got insurance. And then when the crunch comes, you find you haven't. So I was be careful what you write needs to be interpretable. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later on. But just coming about how we do it. So certainly going to Otway Health, and it's although the residents will have one. Really, I mean, I think everyone. I'm coming up to 65. Every week, I see a couple of patients who've had cardiac arrests in the community. And although on television they do fantastically well, a lot of people come in with very bad brain damage afterwards. And you know, that's the sort of thing I'm worried about. And I think everyone should worry about. And no, I could. It could be my desire to, you know, have a tracheostomy and go to a nursing home, but you know, doctors need to know, and we have those discussions, you know, all the time. So it can happen to any of us anytime. So I think we should all have one. It's not a thing that just people in the nursing home should have. The other thing is there's a website that I've been involved with called myvalues.org.au. So my values is one word, but if you put my values as one word into Google, it comes up number one anyway.
Yeah.
And that gives you, it's an online thing, and that gives you a chance to do some trade-offs and have a look at see where you stand and ask some additional questions. It then, at the end, lets you edit stuff a bit and tidy it up, and then it pops it into the Victorian form. And we got a new Victorian form from March of this year. So it populates the whole form for you and does it for you.
Fabulous.
And, and then you can add a bit more onto the form if you want to. Mm. And so these forms are divided into two bits. There's a values bit and an instructional bit. So the values bit is, tell me about yourself and let me understand you. How do you tick? What do you look like? That bit that we can take into account when we're making decisions for the doctors and families. And that's really important. And most people find that relatively easy to do. And then there's an instructional bit. And the instructional bit is, no means no means no. I'm writing that I don't want this, and you're not allowed to give it to me. And if you do, then you'll be sued. So, for instance, this is very appropriate for people who are Jehovah's Witness and say no blood. And when they write no blood, it's a legal document. It protects me from not giving them blood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's absolutely clear. So if you're absolutely adamant that you would not want cardiopulmonary resuscitation in any circumstance, or you would not want to be put on a ventilator, or you'd not want dialysis, or you can write that. So there's an intervention that, or not want blood, or not even want antibiotics. You could write that in that section, and the doctors would be compelled, and the ambulance are compelled not to do it. But very, very few people are that that tough and that organized that they really want to say no means no means no. People sort of mostly want to say, I quite like the medical system, but I don't want it to go mad. And that's where the values bit's really important. So, and I should say that myvalues.org.au site is free, and it's I'm very pleased with it. I think it works quite well.
It's a very good starting point if you don't know where to start, and if you've only just begun to think about it, it will really pick your brain and delve into what your values actually are. You might actually just sort of off the cuff say what your values are, but by the time you actually write something down, that's when the whole perspective changes. And by no means, if you have an advanced care plan, does it have to be concrete and set in stone, I'm assuming?
No, you can always change it. But I mean, a lot of the value stuff is about, listen to me. I think most of us would like to be in the medical system. What we really want is to be respected as a person, as opposed to, you know, a lump of meat as a disease that, you know, goes through the system and no one really cares about you. We want to be cared about. And I think it's rather good that the medical system now would like to know who you are, what makes you tick, what would upset you. No, what would make it, you know, what things can I do to really upset you, and then I can avoid doing them?
Well, that's all generated from life and our life experience and who we are as people. I think once you get to the point where you are suffering from that illness, I know for me, anything that would impair my cognitivity, and my brain capacity would you know, really not warrant me being here very, very much longer if that was the case. So do you actually find that people that will suffer from cognitive ability, that the decision's a bit easier?
Losing cognition is something that scares a lot of people, but you know, how much losing it is the issue, and that's, we explore that in the My Values thing. So it's about for you, how much is an issue. But the important thing, I suppose, that's coming out of this is that it's about you, not about your disease. So people say, oh, well, I don't know what disease I've got, so I can't make the choice. It's actually not about that. It's about you as a person, how you navigate life and how you want to navigate the end bit.
You're sort of preconceiving what you may or may not have, I guess, and nothing may happen to you at all. But
it's an insurance policy then, isn't it, which is good. But, I mean, something happens to us at the end anyway. We're all going to end up in the same way, that we can't avoid that bit. It's so actually thinking about how we're going to navigate that end bit, I think, is saying I'm not going to navigate the end bit because it's not going to happen to me is actually obviously delusion.
I agree with you. Look, from reading your book, it was a very easy read for me, but somewhat challenging. In my thought process of what I should be doing in preparation for the inevitable end. But yeah, inevitably, it is about letting go. Annabelle Crabb describes your book as, this book should start 1,000 conversations. I want to give it to everyone I know. Well, I did. And I definitely had the conversation with my partner as well. It's a really important one to have. Even at my age, I know that especially now that I have kids, it's a really important thing to be talking about. The book is called Letting Go, How to Plan for a Good Death by Dr. Charlie Cork. You can get it through Scribe Publications on scribepublications.com.au. Senny, did you want to rein in a little bit more? Have you got any final questions for Dr. Charlie?
No. Seem to have covered everything.
And I'd say it's also in the fabulous Galapagos Bookshop.
Oh, it's over in the Galapagos Bookshop in Apollo Bay as well. Thank you so much, Dr. Charlie, for joining us today on the Otway Health Check. And thank you to Senny, who's also been with me for the past 4 days on a really good work placement. I really hope that you've enjoyed your time here. Everybody, get advanced care planning orders in place. Talk to Otway Health, talk to your GP, sit down, have a think about it, and go to myvalues.org.au to start that process. This has been the Otway Health Check. I've been Sarah Bell, filling in for Bob Knowles. We'll catch you in the next week. Thanks very much for your time. Good afternoon.